Good morning. These opening words are by Walt Whitman, one of those poets of a big spirit and a big heart and just a big presence in the world. And his words seem particularly helpful in this moment in the world. You, whoever you are, all you continents of Asia, Africa, Europe, Australia, indifferent of place, all you on the numberless islands of the archipelagos of the sea, all you of the centuries hence when you listen to me, all you each and everywhere whom I specify not but include just the same, health to you, goodwill to you. From me and America sent. Each of us is inevitable. Each of us is limitless. Each of us with his or her right upon the earth. Each of us allowed the eternal purposes of the earth. Each of us here as divinely as any is here. My grandfather worked for New Jersey Bell Telephone for 41 years. He was a devoted telephone man, and he retired the year I was born. My mother called him and her mother on the phone with the long, curly cord. A few of you have these phones still. Every Sunday for years. In 2002 or 2003, I was still fairly new here, I went to visit my 90-some-year-old grandfather with my mom. And we were going somewhere in a car together, and my grandfather didn't drive anymore, so he was in the rider's seat up front, and my mother was driving, and I was in the back. And for some reason, we needed to get information about something, so I offered to call ahead to wherever we were going. And I remember sort of feeling like my grandfather was confused by that statement. I made the call, and I'm in the back seat talking away. And my grandfather turned to my mom and said, "Who's she talking to back there?" And my mother said, "She's on the phone." And there was a pause. And you need to know, my mother's name is Susan. And my grandfather said to her, "Sue, it's passed me by." He could not comprehend that I had a phone in my pocket. No phone lines, no cords, none of those mechanical connections that he knew all about. He died in 2006, the year before the first iPhone was released. Do you remember that, before the iPhone was released? My child, meanwhile, knows nothing but a smartphone. I'm not sure he would know what to do with one of those things on one of those curly cords. Their lives started just over a century apart, and the changes in technology between the beginning of each of their lives is just astonishing. Last week, I talked about the changes that are happening in the world, the big shifts, the sort of underground rivers that are moving everything, moving it so much that we sometimes can't even see how much everything has changed. One of those changes is the shift from thinking of ourselves as individuals and independent to understanding that we are profoundly interdependent. And the change I talked about last week was how much the story of the world has become more and more decentralized, which is to say many more stories are being heard and woven into the story. And it is indeed messy and uncertain, and a lot of people are, well, learning that it's different than they thought it was. And this week I want to talk about how quickly everything is happening. And most of all, I want to just notice that together, to notice that it's true, that it's changing very quickly, and that it's probably not going to stop changing very quickly. So I've been reading, this week, the book I've been reading is Thomas Friedman's Thank You for Being Late, An Optimist's Guide to Thriving in the Age of Acceleration. And just the title, you could just settle in on that title and enjoy that for a while. And he talks about the three things that are changing in the world that are interlocking and increasing the speed of change all the time. Technology, which I've just talked about a little bit. Globalization, which has to do with how we're exchanging around the world in new ways. And climate change. And he says that those three changes are sort of pushing each other along every minute. And he describes about technology a thing called Moore's Law, which I, it turns out I referenced last week and didn't know I was referencing it. Moore's Law is the fact that technology is going to double in its capacity every 2 years. And by capacity, I mean the amount of information that it can manage, and the its capacity to make things happen. So our devices get smaller and more powerful, and every 2 years you see a big footstep in that change. And last week I said that the amount of information doubled in the world between 1 AD and 1500 AD, and now it doubles every 2 years, and that it's that same law. So in 1,500 years, people experienced the same amount of change that we've experienced since 2016. If you're feeling a little lightheaded right now, it's all those centuries rushing up behind you. And the thing that I think is important is that it's tempting and almost visceral to try to slow it down, to resist it, to see if we can step out of the current, because it is dizzying. And I sometimes feel like my grandfather. Wow, it's just passed me by. It's just. But the reality is that we're actually caught up in it. We're in the river, tumbling along, and probably can't get out of the river unless you decide to truly get off grid, live completely in the woods, no phone of any kind. Even then, you're probably not able to fully get out of this change that's happening. And so I think one piece is to accept that we're in this river of change, that it is accelerating, that it's going to continue to accelerate, and figure out how to move with the change instead of always trying to not move with the change, which I think can be an almost physical response to try not to let that river just carry you down into the white water. I've been reading and listening to political scientists and poets, and Friedman, who wrote the book Thank You for Being Late, is a journalist. You may have read his reporting from, well, all over the world in the New York Times, but particularly the Middle East. And they're all saying the same thing, that we have to let go of our expectation that things could ever be as they were, that we will ever return to the kind of homeostasis that existed through the industrial era, which ended sometime in the middle of the 20th century. Probably wasn't a moment that the door closed. But the kind of change started to shift. And I think Martin Luther King was one of the people who was able to observe that movement and in some way had a hand in turning that movement. He wrote, one of the speeches that he wrote was entitled The Winds of Change. And in that speech, he lists some of the societal changes around the world that were happening. And I look at it, he wrote it in 1962, and I look back and I think, oh, in 1962, a number of the countries in Africa were not independent from their colonial occupiers. And I sort of knew that, but I didn't quite get it, that a number of those countries have gained their independence in a relatively recent time. And he also talked about the fact that he was aware of how recently lynchings were fairly common in this country, and that by the time he was writing in 1962, that had mostly stopped. And he describes how the lunch counters were beginning to integrate, and that there was just this turning happening in the world, this understanding of people's dignity growing, and that the change was really coming. And although we're frustrated with the fact that it hasn't moved as fast as we want it to in that regard, it's clear that that change is continuing to sweep along. And I think all of that was happening because people were tapping into some of their deepest convictions, one of which that is that we all have worth and dignity, which is our first principle in Unitarian Universalism. The other thing that was happening in 1962, and you still see it as one of the movers of change now, is that people were working together in wider and wider networks, that they understood how to work together, and that action in connectedness, in relationship. What was the word you used, Rob? Was it proximity?
Close proximity.
That does something to change that being scattered can't do. So the change came from a new set of ethics and a new set of relationships. It's that interdependence, that deep comprehension that we are, in fact, in a network of mutuality. And not just as an intellectual idea, because that's one thing, but to be able to hold on to each other when difficult things are happening means that you are together and can move that river along. Martin Luther King and my grandfather might both be stunned by how much things have changed here in 2018. So this problem of the fact that the change is going to keep happening, it's not going to slow down, brings me back to what I said last week, which is that we have to master ourselves in this tumult. We have to figure out how to keep our heads above water in this moving river. And I read somewhere that if you're going to be engaged in what's happening, if you're going to be awake to it, you have to treat yourself like a professional athlete. Like a professional athlete, which is to say to always be thinking about what's my practicing for the week, how am I going to keep practicing the thing that I need to do, how am I going to tend my body and my soul so that I can be strong and resilient, so that I don't get injured, and if I do get injured, I have more capacity to come back from that. But that idea of always planning what you're practicing, always really mapping out, how am I going to keep working on strengthening and endurance and flexibility? How do I keep thinking about how to be part of a team? Is a wonderful metaphor to know that we're in a long-distance run or a championship set of games or whatever your sports metaphor is that helps you think about how to treat yourself like a professional athlete who's really in the middle of training. And one of the things that athletes have to really think about is how to keep their bodies flexible. Because if you get rigid or if you get hemmed in by your own self, then you can't respond as well. And Friedman tells us a story from his Minnesota town where he grew up that offers a wonderful mantra for helping maintain mental flexibility. So he grew up in a small Minnesota town that was relatively diverse. We may sort of stereotype Minnesota as being just people from Sweden and Norway, but he had a town that had a fair amount of diversity, and they had figured out how to work together pretty well. Not perfectly, but pretty well. And they were trying to figure out, not that long ago, in order to meet this new age, how to offer free public Wi-Fi in their town. But they knew that required a fair amount of energy, so they decided to power it with a solar array. And they picked a company from Maryland to set up the solar array and power the Wi-Fi and step into this web of connectivity. And it went well. The solar panels got the Wi-Fi running, and it was all good, and then it snowed. And then it snowed, and then it snowed, and then it snowed, and the Maryland company had set up solar panels that weren't prepared to clear the amount of snow that came down in Minnesota. And so there were the solar panels holding up these wonderful piles of snow and not collecting sun energy and not powering the Wi-Fi. And the city council, who had embarked on this project and spent a fair amount of money on it, realized that it was a failure. That it just didn't work. And so they took it all down and disassembled it and were really upfront with people about, well, that really didn't work. And shortly after they had declared it to be a failure, one of the counselors, who had really advocated for this plan, I think very publicly, was in a local restaurant, and the cook at the restaurant said, "Say, aren't you the Wi-Fi guy?" And the Wi-Fi guy braced himself for some commentary, and what the man said was, "Boy, I'm sorry the company couldn't get that to work out. What are you going to try next?" How's that for a response to change and to things not going the way you expected them to go? And in fact, for having tried something that was, in this case, expensive, it just didn't work. Well, what are you going to try next? And of course, that wasn't the entire response to the project. And of course, there was some other kinds of reevaluating to do, but that's a flexibility that lets a swimmer in this river of change keep swimming and keep connecting with the other people. That's one of the other things that's just beautiful in that moment, is that I'm sure there was a lot of frustration in the town. And I'm sure that there were friendships and connections that were harmed by how hard it was to navigate that. But this response allowed them to stay connected and keep working together for whatever was next. Friedman's entire book is an argument for the fact that this era of change requires that we be ready to reinvent ourselves all the time. That we accept that we have to put some amount of our energy, probably every day, into reinventing ourselves, to figuring out how to respond to what's going on now. And that we have to just keep practicing keep noticing what's going on and trying out new things. And that we will have to keep our eye on how to keep making connections and sustain connections. It is a demanding era that we live in. And the other thing that I hear over and over again from Friedman and from someone in a TED Talk and from a poet, that these really demanding times in our lives, in our personal lives and in the world as it is right now, are also times of astonishing creativity in humanity, that comes up over and over again, that really calls things out of us that sometimes those stable, quiet times don't. And so that's what we can really look for and be hopeful and excited about, is that even as we are working hard to reinvent ourselves, reinvent our communities, and keep making relationships in a changing world, that it means that new things that we had not thought of before are coming into being, even right now. Even in this room, we don't see it yet, but something is probably bubbling up that will be a wonderful gift to who knows how many people. So we'll keep swimming together, keep practicing, think of ourselves as professional athletes, treat ourselves with that kind of care, and keep saying, what are you going to try next?